Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
All right, so right now, if you want to go to the Inside the Crown newsletter, you can go to bit.ly/LeskyHatesBobbyWitt, and it will take you right there. And whenever Lesky starts calling for Bobby Witt to come up, I will change that URL, which I can do, to bit.ly/LeskyLovesBobbyWitt. But right now, bit.ly/LeskyHatesBobbyWitt.
On Sports Radio 810. WHB.
The link works. bit.ly/LeskyHatesBobbyWitt. You can go check out Inside the Crown. Alternatively, you can go to insidethecrown.substack.com to read all the latest work from David Lesky, who joins us now. You can also follow him on Twitter at DBLesky. And Lesky, we've just had a couple of really normal, just sort of straight up and down average baseball games these last couple of days. No real big storylines, no long-term implications. It's been really relaxing.
Yeah. Well, today was better. Yesterday was stressful. I did not at any point think they were going to win that game, even though they never trailed at any point.
Yeah.
I was like, at every step of the way, I'm like, all right, well, it's 6-3 after this. No, 3 outs. Okay. Oh, well, they're going to hit a 2. Nope, man. Oh, 3 out. Oh, there's a ball off Jared Walsh's junk. That's over. that was it. And, yeah, so yesterday was a little more stressful. Today was one of those that you just kind of sat back and watched. I don't know if you realize this, but with the Clevelanders getting perfect games right now, and probably
got that notification.
The Royals are about to have the second best winning percentage in the American League.
Heck yeah, we are.
When this day is over. So I'm just saying, we're talking about a first place team right now. And we can only probably say that for this show, probably for the rest of the year.
Well, I mean, listen, I think I don't want to. We're going to say it today. And then whatever we say tomorrow, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Day after tomorrow.
That's fair.
We'll figure it out.
Here's the thing, though. We can say it any day we want. It doesn't have to be true. If we believe it to be true, it is true. That's my motto.
You can't lie on the radio.
Oh, you're right.
That's
forgot
illegal.
About that lie detector.
I know. No one's ever lied on the radio before. Anyway, today brought to you by our sponsor, this thing that'll fix your troopy wee-wee. I love it. It's a great product that'll fix it. Never lie. Can't lie on the radio. Let's start with today. You can work backwards because I think we've had actually like pretty interesting things happen the last three games. But you're right. Today wasn't stressful. It was a little for me. Today was a little bit stressful just within the larger overarching storyline of what's Brad Keller gonna look like this inning. And there were a couple of scares. Rudy was pointing this out earlier. Didn't exactly get a bunch of help from his defense. But I was just sort of always a little worried that maybe the bottom was going to fall out for Brad Keller. And it didn't. And then I guess you didn't have anything to worry about after that.
Yeah, I was at the game, so I didn't get a chance. I was, you know, at kind of a not the typical television angle, you know, that you get to see everything. And so I went back because, you know, for you, I did this.
Thank you.
I went back and I literally went, I don't know, Baseball Savant, and I pulled up. There were a few at-bats that I had in my head that I thought, oh, I don't know that he pitched that well. He got lucky. No, he pretty much did whatever he wanted to Angels hitters. And it was nice to see. Yeah, he got in a little trouble here and there, but he didn't get hit all that hard. There wasn't he gave up 3 barrels in his first 2 games. So that's like the perfectly hit ball, essentially. Yeah. None of that today. He only gave up 5 hard hit balls out of 17 that were in play. He got some strikeouts, which he doesn't typically do. I mean, it was a really nice Brad Keller game. 98 on the gun in the third inning to Ohtani, and then the next batter with Trout, I think it was 97.8. So, I mean, he was throwing hard. I'm still a little bit wondering why he's not throwing his slider quite as much. He likes that pitch. And it's still in the back of my head. Because it's one of those things, like when you start to think about something and then the results not even the results, but the data backs up what you thought 2 weeks ago. It's really hard to get off that thought. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I thought, okay, he's throwing fewer sliders. That might be a problem for his elbow. And then he just keeps throwing fewer sliders. I can't get my head away from it entirely. Really? But today he looked good. He looked really good today. The thing that I noticed, and I'm writing about this for tomorrow, Cam Gallagher kind of just set up and let the ball move, which, you know, all those stories about Brad Keller, the ball moves a lot. Just throw it to the middle of the plate and see what happens. I feel like Gallagher kind of coaxed that out of him today.
Interesting.
I didn't go back to see if Perez was doing the same thing in his last start. So it's not necessarily the Gallagher's the answer when Keller pitches or whatever, but I think Gallagher's a really good catcher. He's very sound behind the plate. I think that, you know, if there's a catcher who you want in there when your pitcher's in a slump, Gallagher, I think he's a good guy to have back there. And it worked. It worked today. Hopefully, I think his next start, let's see, it'll be against the Rays, because he won't pitch against the Blue Jays this weekend. So Rays don't have much of an offense, so he has a chance to keep getting right, which is a good thing.
Yeah, that's interesting about Gallagher. I hadn't thought about that very much. We talked about this after two Keller starts of how many starts do you give it before you get like really worried. How many good starts before you stop worrying about him at all? And is it more going to be about him going back to the slider, I guess, than the results?
Well, you know, I don't think he necessarily has to go back to the slider, because the thing is, he only threw it, I think, 21% of the time today, but also his fastball was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why would you throw a pitch that looks like, I love a good slider. You go on the Pitching Ninja Twitter account, and you're going to see a lot of really good sliders and really bad swings. Problem with a slider, sometimes they just kind of hang. And when they hang, they get destroyed. And so I love a good slider, but even the best pitchers of the best sliders will hang them occasionally. And a really good fastball, it's a lot harder for that one to get mauled, like you saw with the Yermin Mercedes home run from last Thursday. You just don't see it quite as much on a 97-mile-per-hour fastball. So I think that there might be a reason for that. So, I mean, to answer the question, I don't know what the answer is. If he goes out Monday, I guess, as long as there's no rainouts, which it looks like there probably will be on Friday. But if he goes out there in his next start and he goes seven innings and gives up four hits and no more barrels and, you know, kind of does Brad Keller things, I'm probably pretty close to okay with him. It may be one more start after that, but the track record is long enough that it's not going to take a whole lot to get me away from worried, I guess. It's going to take more to get me worried than to get me away from it.
Yeah, I think that is completely fair, because it's what the larger sample size has indicated versus the outlier, and
exactly.
a couple of outlier games are easier to write off than a couple of games that look, you know, much more like what you've expected. I don't know. Is there anything else from today's game that you actually do think is super interesting? I mean, Salvi's continued to just look excellent at the plate, which is a lot of fun. But was there anything specifically from today outside of Brad Keller? Also, the bullpen was interesting, I guess. So maybe there's a couple of things.
Well, I think, first of all, Mike Matheny continues to be really good at managing a bullpen.
Yeah.
Which, what?
Right. You're right.
I'm sorry. Did I just say those words in that
yeah.
order? He's doing a great job. We weren't really sure, because we talked about this last season, and it was a 60-game season where you can be a little harder on your bullpen arms because they don't have to go 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought, okay, well, let's see what he does in a one. No, he's doing the same thing. it takes buy-in from everybody, so it's not entirely on Matheny, because you've got to have relievers who are willing to say, I'm not the closer, I'm not the seventh inning, you know, whatever it is. But, I mean, he's going to the guy who he needs to go to. And look, Monday night, Scott Barlow didn't have it. And, you know, he goes to Scott Barlow quite a bit. And I think it was just one of those things that he probably should have not on Monday. The Royals weren't going to win that game regardless, so it didn't impact the outcome. But for the most part, I mean, I feel like he's just got a really good pulse on who to go to and when, and it's worked pretty well so far. The bullpen they've had their hiccups, sure, but In general, I think he's been really good with that. The other thing, the numbers will not show this. And I wrote this morning, and then I noticed today during the game, Jorge Soler, I think, is close. I think he's like right there, because last night he had two swings that were, I mean, he just missed the ball. And he ended up popping up routine flyouts, which you look at and you go, well, that's not any better. Well, it's better than swinging and missing, A. Mm-hmm. But he just looked more comfortable at the plate. Today he did strike out once, but in the plate appearance he struck out, he laid off at least two pitches that 2 days ago he is just flailing at. I don't know. I just think the swing looks better. I think he's right there. And I wrote this morning, he destroys Tigers pitching in Detroit, and they are heading there after their homestand. So if he can take these next seven games and kind of ramp up, we might be looking at like 12 home runs in three games the way he hits in America. So I think that's worth watching. Like I said, the results weren't there at all today, but I continued to see things that I started to see last night. So it's encouraging. And look, we're talking about like these really minute victories that nobody cares about,
yeah,
except for in the course of a season, guys go through slumps and they come out of them and you start to see them come out in different ways. And I just think he's getting a lot closer. So that was a really nice thing that I saw today.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. I think that's worth keeping an eye on, because you're right. Whenever he is no longer slumping, it's not going to just happen in an at-bat. There's going to have been a lead-up and then hopefully a payoff there. I want to talk about Matheny more, because you mentioned the bullpen usage. It's been fascinating and really good. We were talking to Danny Wilniak last hour, and we were talking a little bit about like the animated, like excitable Mike Matheny that we've seen, and then also how that's translated to at least the pitchers. But I think there was a play today, and I'm kicking myself that I can't remember specifically what it was. But it might have, I don't know, I care. I couldn't tell you. There was something on the bases, I think, today. It was like, oh, there's a little excitement there. And there's like an energy to the team at the moment that I think, if it doesn't start with Matheny, it continues with him. He even talked back a weekend or two ago whenever he flipped Salvi and Santana in the order, because the logic there was, the spots that lead off more in later innings, and the analytics of that also supporting all those things. And I mentioned all three of those little snippets because those are all three things that I was very skeptical about seeing that evolution from St. Louis Mike Matheny to Kansas City Mike Matheny. And it's all been there, and it's all been good. Like, it's all made sense. It's had results. And I was not going to be the world's biggest optimist on Mike Matheny having some significant changes in so many different aspects of his managing. And it seems like they've pretty much all come through.
Yeah, he's a different person.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was hired, I was not only pessimistic, I was unhappy about it. It was in my mind a bad hire.
Yeah.
And I was, to this point, dead wrong.
Yeah.
and you know, in our defense, we can only know what we know.
Sure.
And what we knew was what happened in St. Louis. And the thing that really encourages me about Matheny, I mean, yes, in general, the fact that he's been willing to change, but I mean, he won in St. Louis. They were good. Now, yeah. They weren't as good at the end as they were at the beginning, which kind of points to the fact that it was La Russa's team that he won with and all that. But he still won. He's got a really good career winning percentage as a manager. And it's really easy for a guy like that to say, I don't care what you think. Have you won whatever percentage of games in the majors as a manager? Because I have.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do that. And I think, and take it back to Ned Yost, I think Yost was similar. Now, he didn't, it's a different time.
Yeah.
Even a decade ago is totally different. But, I mean, the biggest thing Ned Yost talked about, he learned how to handle the people in the organization. He leaned on his coaches. He was more open to players kind of doing what they wanted as long as they were doing the right, you know, all that stuff. He changed too, and I think Matheny is following that lead, but in an even bigger way, because it's impacting not just the way he handles the team, but game situations. I mean, you mentioned the Santana and Salvi swap, and that's, oh, by the way, that'd be a great sitcom. And that's really cool that the Royals have a manager who said, hey, this is why this will work, and it makes sense. It's not, hey, we bat Alcides Escobar leadoff because we win.
Right.
I mean, look, it worked.
Right.
They won, obviously. But there's a logic behind this move, and I think it's mostly coincidence, but both those guys have done pretty well since they moved them. So
yeah.
it worked out pretty well, and I think, I mean, I think there is something, too, to occasionally you have to shake things up. Okay, you know, people talk about, like, when you're dieting, sometimes you need to have, it's like a really bad meal to jumpstart your metabolism. Sometimes you need to move the lineup around to jumpstart the offense.
Mm.
And even a little switch can do that. And that's not analytical or anything, but it's mostly anecdotal. But at least when the analytics support it, too, you're like, okay, we'll give that a shot.
Yeah.
And look, he's also, it's much less, and it hasn't had the impact yet, but he flipped, he moved Taylor up to 6 and Dozier to 7 when Dozier was struggling, too. And that's a more traditional manager move, I think. But he's not afraid to make those moves. And I think that, you know, the enthusiasm you mentioned, but it seems like he's worried about tomorrow because you have to be worried about tomorrow, but he's really worried about winning this game. And there are so many managers who manage in like a 4-day block, basically. Mm. And I think he's blessed with a lot of good arms in the bullpen to be able to do this, but I don't think he worries about who he's going to use tomorrow when he wants to win a game today. And that's a nice trait to have. That's a credit to Dayton Moore for building a deep bullpen too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hey, first place team, they're looking good right now. And I think Matheny's been a really big part of it. I never thought I'd say that.
Yeah, yeah. It's just one of those. It's one of those like genuinely fun, exciting, kind of cool things to have just to have been wrong about. But to your point a second ago, I don't think that it was a matter of a prediction. It was a matter of, boy, I don't know if it's good math to assume that this dude's going to look like a totally different person here than he did on the other side of the state. And he has. And all the stuff that he said. And also, I think unanimously, his like introductory press conference, everyone was like, you know what? He sounds like he's learned some stuff. He sounds different.
Right. We'll give it a shot.
We'll see how it goes. But it's a lot of guys win press conferences and don't win baseball games and don't win over their locker rooms or their clubhouses and everything. And it seems like, yes, it's just, yeah, I think it's really interesting.
And I think this clubhouse, this is a Dayton Moore special that they seem to love each other. And it's easy to love each other when you're 6-4 and first place and all that. But I don't know. They seem to not really have any issues when they were 4-4.
You know? Right. Yeah.
We don't have much of a sample, obviously, but it's a fun team to root for. I feel like, and you know, some of the last couple of years, not just because they were bad, they were not easy to root for.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't look at that team and you go, you know, I really hope they win. I mean, even covering them without the fan lens on, he was like, whatever, I don't care. You're not very good and you're not very likable. So just, can you get this game over with so I can go to bed?
And, right.
And that's not this team.
Yeah.
I think that, and that's, you know, guys like Hanser Alberto, he's pure energy. You know, he's not on the field every day, but he's pure energy. Dyson is pure energy. Not on the field every day, but he had a crazy stolen base today when he got picked off, but still they didn't make a throw on him. That was fun to watch. And he also made a great throw to second, by the way, on a ball that he almost made a great catch on. But, yeah, I mean, you get these energy guys in there. Santana's energy. Salvi, obviously, is energy. They've just got a really good vibe, I think, that even if they end up, I mean, I still have them at 76-86. I'm not going to change that from 10 games. You know, even if they end up there, it's still at least a fun 76 wins and not just this treacherous drag of a season that you know, we've seen before and every team has seen before. So that's definitely a good thing.
And not only not a treacherous drag, but also like there's something building like in where those two things do not always come hand in hand. Sometimes you get a fun team that's sort of a dead-end fun team. Those are pretty rare, I guess, but I do think they exist. And then sometimes you have a team that's building to something, but they're not a whole lot of fun. And I think this team can do both, which is, again, it's just nice, man. It's just nice to have it on or to go to a game, which I haven't gotten to do yet, and to just be like, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna see something here that's gonna play for future years, but it's also going to just be a likable, easy drinking beer of a baseball team for a little while. It's gonna make me feel good. I like that.
Well, even on Monday, I mean, they were down 4-0 and they couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Benintendi hits a rocket long foul ball. That woke the team up. Like, when has a foul ball ever been the catalyst for what ended up being? They scored 3 runs. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got back into the game. It was just stuff like that. You know, I feel like in past seasons, maybe not last year, but a couple years ago, a guy hits a long foul ball, and you probably look in the dugout and see yawns.
Right.
But the fans got into it. The dugout got into it after just literally a long foul ball. That's all it took. So this is a much better brand of baseball than what we've seen in the fairly recent past.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. I like it. Okay, I want to talk about the other pitchers that we've seen the last couple of days, because I think you've got interesting stuff on both of them. Let's start with Danny Duffy here, because I just – whatever his story of the season ends up being, I think it's going to be interesting regardless of what it ends up looking like. But we got another Duffy start, and you thought what of what we've seen now from him with a slightly larger sample size?
I thought he was better in the second than he was in the first, and he was so good in the first. I mean – he seemed like he was attacking hitters differently in the second start. I thought, you know, the velocity was crazy. I can't remember. I wrote it and I forgot what it was. He had the fastest fastball since like 2016 or something like that. I can't remember the exact date there, but
September 13th, 2016. Just
okay.
For your sake of knowing, you were real close.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, I mean, I wrote it. So well, I feel like
you also wrote it a little while ago. Like,
I mean, in a second,
I'm going to ask you what you thought about Mike Matheny's bullpen usage. Like, that happens.
That's fair. But yeah, I thought that I thought he was really good. I thought everything was crisp. We talked about this last week. I feel like we don't talk about Duffy's changeup enough.
Yeah,
and I guess if I keep saying we don't talk about Duffy's changeup enough, we probably talk about it too much, maybe. I don't know. There's some line that we're about to cross.
It's just that people don't listen to us enough. That changes the target moves.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Exactly. People don't listen to us talking about Duffy's changeup enough.
They really don't.
And it's really good. It's a really good changeup. It's the Volquez changeup. The Vulcan grip thing. And he just uses it really well. Like, he's gonna have a bad start at some point.
Sure.
He's gonna have a bad inning that everybody's gonna go, "Oh, Duffy's back." And look, he might be. I don't know. It's 2 starts. He's had 2 good starts in a row many times in his career. But he looks really good out there. And, I mean, on this team, he pitched the 4th game of the year. Is he the 4th starter or the 3rd? I don't know. But if that's a guy in the middle of your rotation and not at the front, I feel like you're talking about some good things for the rotation. And I liked what I saw.
Yeah. I'll hear something that I don't think we talk about enough is the middle of rotations. It was something I ended up talking about with Brad Keller on one of the Baseball Tonight shows recently. Like, if Brad Keller is your quote unquote ace, which I've also compared this already, but not every opening day starter is an ace, just like not every starting quarterback is a franchise quarterback. But if Brad Keller is in the middle of your rotation somewhere and these young pitchers end up taking the 1 and 2 spots, you're building a real rotation there. If Danny Duffy is somewhere down towards the bottom of your rotation, you've got some actual juice up in front of him, and that matters the whole way down. Like, the depth there, I think, is really important, and it's something that not enough people are listening to us talk about.
You're absolutely right. You can win with Brad Keller. You can win with Danny Duffy. I don't know if you can win with those two being your best 2 starters,
right?
But you definitely can win with those guys in your rotation.
Yep.
And yeah, the answer is probably not Mike Minor as your 2. He's a nice bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with that. Brady Singer, can he step up?
Yep.
Can Coar, Lynch, any of these guys, any of the 43 names we could rattle off, can they step up? And that's the question. I mean, the Royals are going to go as far as two of their young pitching prospects lets them go. Yep. It's as simple as that.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter which two. I don't care. I don't care if it's Singer and John Heasley. I don't care if it's Tovar and Alec Marsh. I don't care who it is. Two of them need to step up and be a 1 and 2.
Yep.
And maybe even a 1 and 3. Really, you can win with a deep lineup with even a 2, even with 1, 2, 2, 3s and a 4 and a 5. I mean, you can win with that rotation too. But the top two are probably going to have to come from those young guys, unless they go out and spend some money, which they could too. But I think this quote-unquote rebuild is going to go as far as two of those guys let them go.
Yeah. I think that's a good call. Let's talk about Singer some here, because you wrote – I love the concept. The inciting incident of this is very good. Tell everyone why Brady Singer could stand to be a bit more wild.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is he's too much in the middle of the plate. You know, last season when he was successful, he was working the top of the zone and with his fastball, and the bottom of the zone with his slider, and below the zone too with his slider. And then Monday night, the stuff was good. He was sharp, I thought, but he was hanging out too much in the middle of the plate, and because of that, he got hit. Now he gave up one earned run because the defense was. I'm truly convinced that at the end of the year, that will be one of the two or three worst played games they play all season long.
Mm-hmm.
It happened. You're gonna. Every team's going to have those games. It just went early. It's one of eight games. And, you know, it's a huge sample in the small sample. Eventually, it'll be a small sample in the large sample. But, you know, he put his defense in a position where they had to make plays because he was giving up a lot of hits, a lot of batted balls because he wasn't working the edges of the zone. And so, you know, I don't think it would be the worst thing if he threw a few more pitches outside the strike zone. You can't let a hitter get comfortable. He was so much in the bottom third of the zone that the eye level just never changed.
Mm.
And then in the fourth inning, they started to throw a little bit up, and he was more successful. And that's not a coincidence. It's the fact that you have to mess with hitters. It's timing and their eye level. Those are the two things that get you success. You can move their eyes and you can change their timing. You're going to pitch well. And the problem is he doesn't really have a pitch that messes with their timing, so he really has to rely on eye level. And he just didn't do it on Monday. And I've seen it a few times with him, that he kind of gets real comfortable in a spot, and then he gets hit. So I would like to just see him a little bit more wild to be able to – you've got to make a hitter uncomfortable, and that's just one way to do it. And he just sometimes doesn't do it enough.
I think the eye level thing. This is probably me being the like baseball amateur or whatever that I am of trying to. I really like a clever little like thumbtack that I can put into the wall to add other things onto because eventually I'm going to get lost in the various acronyms for stats that I want to understand very badly but don't fully. The messing with timing and eye level as a bit of a simple summary is so good and seems so simple. But so now what does Singer do? What do the Royals do? Is that a coaching thing? Is that something that maybe if he's just more intentional about, he can get back to? Because, I mean, again, it sounds like you believe that he has the stuff to do that. It might just be a choice. Is that accurate?
It might be a choice. And look, I didn't look and see where Salvador Perez was setting up every time. He may have just missed his spot. It's funny because he throws down the middle, and that may be that you totally miss your spot, even though it's a perfect strike. So I don't really know what the answer is. But if you look back, look at his start in September when he dominated the Tigers a couple of times, which a lot of people dominated the Tigers, but still, he did it. Those starts, you're seeing fastballs up, sliders down, inside, outside. I mean, a hitter, they can't get comfortable in a spot. And he kind of did that. It looked like he was trying to do that against the Rangers, but he just had zero command. So when I think he needs to be a bit more wild, just a bit, not all the way there, he can't go all the way to the other side of like 1989 Randy Johnson wild.
Right.
But when he was successful last season, and we have – a small sample, but a fairly divided sample of good Singer and bad Singer. When he was good, It's because the ball was darting around the strike zone and just above it, just below it, just to the left of it, just to the right. He was moving the ball around enough that, like I said, a hitter just couldn't get comfortable. And he just didn't do it on Monday. But the fastball is good. It moves. The slider is good. It moves. His changeup was actually pretty good against the Rangers. He only threw two on Monday against the Angels. So didn't really get to gauge that at all. And that would be a thing that would change timing as well as eye level if he can master that changeup or at least make it an average pitch. But yeah, he just needs to do a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that he's ever a one, or even maybe he's not a two, but you know, if he can get that consistently, he's an easy three in a rotation. And again, that's a guy you can win with.
Yeah. I think I am so excited to see him pitch again to see if that changes. I'll let you go on this. I don't know if you've got MLB TV on or not, but Carlos Rodon just got through the eighth with at least two strikeouts that inning. I didn't see the first out, but at least it was a pop out and two strikeouts in the eighth. So one more inning for a perfect game. If anyone's looking for something to throw on the TV, MLB Network's doing a look in at least whenever he's on.
And
the
Rodon's
mound.
A good story too. Because like his teammate Eloy Jimenez, he passed away last year and came back.
You would think that'd be leading the coverage.
Comeback player of the year, I would say.
Yeah.
You would think. But no, he was a disaster. He had like an 8.5 ERA. He couldn't, his fastball was down to like 91 last season.
His soul died.
I don't know if you remember the Bob Nightingale tweet when he was re-signed, they re-signed their closer. Carlos Rodon, who's never pitched in the ninth inning before.
I do. That might be my best data point on Carlos Rodon is remembering that tweet and people dunking on it because it was very funny.
I thought it was great. But it's a really good story. Look, you get an asterisk when you throw it against the Indians, but still, it's a perfect game is a perfect game. So that's exciting. Good for Rodon, and he's going to put the Royals in first place all by themselves.
Just good news all the way around. Lesky, always excellent to talk to you. Enjoy, I guess, just being at every single Royals game ever, because I feel like you've been in – have you been to every home game so far? It feels like you have been.
I missed two. So, and I'm not going tomorrow, so I'll miss three. The ratio is going to get worse. I just happened to go to a bunch early.
I would rather go when it's a little chilly than go whenever it's 175 degrees. So I feel like you've stacked your lineup appropriately.
Yeah, it's worked out okay.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. All right, Lesky, we'll let you go. Thank you again. And if you want to read what Lesky's writing about, all these everything that we've talked about so far, there's been something about it so far on Inside the Crown, and you can go check it out at bit.ly/LeskyHatesBobbyWitt. Thank you, Lesky.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
You could also, if you'd prefer, just go to insidethecrown.substack.com, although I don't know why you would, whenever you can see for yourself that the Bitly does, in fact, work. You can also follow him on Twitter, at DBLesky. I imagine we'll get a conclusion on the perfect game thing by the end of tonight's show.
Should happen.
We'll take a break. We'll come back in a little bit. We got some draft stuff we could talk about. I have to explain how I hurt my mouth. And we'll do a check-in on Rudy. He's playing through pain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing through pain. Rudy's was probably more painful.
Oh,
mine's
hurt.
Definitely more embarrassing.
It hurt.
And maybe, you know what? Listen, this show's been all about the radio tease.
It hurts.
And we will let you in on what happened in our various injuries, which career-threatening for the radio business.
Yeah, not good.
Playing through pain. We'll explain why next.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Are you a Sour Patch Kids fan, generally?
Love them.
Yeah.
I just can't... I don't know. You said like it tasted like
I keep licking the inside of my mouth. Like, unpleasantly. I'm sorry. Go ahead, TJ.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Several things to the Twitch chat really quick. First from the Kyle 0915. Hello, yes, I was referred to by a man on Twitter that enjoys raccoons and tasing Seth Kaiser. Am I in the right place? Oh, Kyle, you've never been in a more right place. Also, Chaotic Warrior has asked about Austin Rivers. Rudy, you want to give... Beards, actually, you know what? Beards, prepare a shot clock for me. We'll circle back on that one. I'll give you 24 seconds on Austin Rivers. Also...
Do I have to go 24 seconds on Austin Rivers?
Yep. And JT asked, any chance this music was referred by Sammy Watkins? I'll take this excuse to explain again. Now during commercial breaks on Twitch, we've got some lo-fi hip-hop beats that are playing during the breaks.
Now you don't have to listen to a bunch of, you know, radio-specific commercials or whatever. And, you know, if you, whatever you want to do during the breaks of this show to enhance your experiences between you and God and Sammy Watkins. But I will say that the royalty-free lo-fi hip-hop music that I found to put for the music breaks, the only album of such genre that was available on the site that we use for royalty-free music was called Hashtag 420 Blaze It.
Heck yeah.
And then it was like vaporwave, lo-fi, hip-hop, chill beats, relax, weed or something. I don't know. But your radar there was pretty close, JT. All right, hit me with the shot clock. Beards, the Denver Nuggets have signed Austin Rivers. He is going to be a 1-to-1 Jamal Murray replacement. And Rudy, your thoughts on Austin Rivers signing with the Nuggets? The season is back on.
I mean, it's fine. Like, I don't know what else, like, they really could do that's better. I don't know what free agent is necessarily better, and it's obviously past the trade deadline, so it's not like they can go trade for somebody. He's somebody who obviously, like, can score at a decently high level, right? Has that capability. Hasn't done it much for a few years, but has done it in the past, and, you know, they just need somebody else who could score, I guess. It's fine.
Also change. Pretty decent defender.
Yeah. It doesn't change anything. Like, it's not a bad move. I think it's probably the best move that they can make. But, you know, I think their ceiling is winning a first-round playoff, winning a round-one series depending on who it's against.
I know I'm as big a culprit of this as any of us. This isn't me lashing out at either of you. But
we're way over.
We really have to let the shot clock mean something or else.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Really lost its power. Because, again, the shot clock reviews.
That's fair.
I don't know if I got out at shot clock time ever. Yeah. And I think it's sort of like I'm going to mix basketball moves now. But I think you kind of get a chance to, like, collect yourself at the end of the buzzer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the ball is in the air. You've got to finish your thought
in like a second
as the buzzer is going off or as it's wrapping up, because the ball's in the air right before the shot clock buzzes, mm-hmm. but it's got to go in by then.
That's fair.
We just have to, again, this isn't really, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
I don't
the
have
perfect,
it on in here.
Gotta
so
see the
know.
Replay.
Oh, it's on. You could have, I knew you wouldn't change.
I will be interested to see the replay.
Did he bunt or was this a crappy hit? Because either way, this is absolute dork material. A braid of first, a head first slide. Perfect game is lost. I think they're going to overturn this.
Yep, I think he's safe.
I think they're going to overturn this. Did he bunt and then head first slide at first? We're going to get a dork club. Oh, maybe not. Who is this?
I think
this?
He actually might be out.
Who's swinging into first?
Is that Josh Naylor?
Who?
I think it's Josh Naylor.
What's on second?
Naylor?
Yeah, Naylor. I think it's Josh Naylor.
I don't know if I'm third.
Also, this
like
is not
Taylor,
like,
but with
Abreu would have in any other situation is letting that play go because it was a tough play. His knee might have hyperextended. This is ugly. This is we're doing.
I don't know when his foot really. Oof. That might. It honestly might just be too close to overturn. It might just end up being so close that they don't overturn it. And honestly, hey baseball, hey refs. Maybe don't overturn it.
I'm trying to figure out
hey,
still.
Hey, how about we like pull
hey,
back on video
maybe,
replay in all sports?
Maybe we're just. Well, that's not the ref's fault.
By the way, guys, I kind of
called
accidentally.
Called him out.
Good. Get him out of here.
There we go.
Absolute dork move.
Right call.
Get a hit. Cowards.
There we go.
It may have been an actual swing. It was just a choppy little roller to first base, and Jose Abreu scooped it up and went over and hyperextended his knee
game,
trying to touch first base.
Only throw 98 pitches.
I sort of accidentally sideswiped Funko Pops earlier. Now, this has just graced my timeline. There is a Funko Pop for
that's
the fine. This is Fine dog.
Yeah, no, that's cool. There's a Funko Pop for everything.
Yeah,
yes.
But this one's new, and I love it.
Yeah, no, Funko
so that
Pops,
one might
are,
get, that
Funko
one might
Pops
get,
are great.
I think they're a little overrated. There's so
overrated.
Many.
Yeah.
I mean, I am. But I...
I'm a big Funko Pop fan.
I think I might have to pick that one up right there.
Not everyone's good, right? Like not like but they typically make good ones.
By the way, diving the first base, sliding the first base like that head first does not speed you up. There was a whole sports science on this.
Yeah. The sliding literally the reason why you slide into second and third base is to slow yourself down so you don't go over the base. Like that's why you slide. It's like, yeah. The only time you
and
should
avoid a tag.
Yeah, the only time you should slide into first is if basically the first baseman has to come off the bag, and he is basically trying to tag high, so you slide underneath the tag. That's the only and that's the time that they never do it. They stay up and they get tagged and like they get a mitt to the chest. And those moments, slide. You're not sliding to get to the back faster. You're sliding to get underneath the tag.
Beards, this may end up being a real break reconstruction
Listen
for
to me,
you
because
we're not gonna
clearly do all this stuff.
We're not gonna take a break until we have a perfect game resolution. It is the top of the ninth with one out right now.
0-2 count.
So whatever you gotta do, you can.
What?
Mark yourself. What was that?
That was like, my, oh, God, we're going to have an 8-minute break.
What was that?
Beards, who cares, Beards?
I do.
He hit him!
Oh, the perfect game is over.
Rodon hit him on the foot!
Challenge it!
He lost the perfect game by hitting him on the foot?
Oh, my goodness. He didn't attempt to get out of the way. Call him out. No, it's a strike. He didn't move.
Incredible dork material from Cleveland. Incredible dork. He's going to have to settle for a no-hitter.
You got
to
move that foot. You got to move the foot. Come on. You had to put a little bit of effort into it.
Dorks. All of them dorks. Cleveland's a bunch of dorks.
A dorky city with a bunch of dorky teams.
Dorks.
All dorks.
Move your foot, you dork.
Bleeping dork.
You gotta hit this guy too. He almost did.
Yeah, now this time you gotta go with the next guy's head. You gotta
load the bases with bean balls here.
You just gotta go at people now.
How did you hurt your mouth, Rudy?
So I was just eating my dinner.
What was the food?
Turkey sandwich. A little bit of lettuce, a little bit of tomato.
What are you saying, Beards?
Is this the last segment? Are we doing that still?
Maybe. Depends on if we get... If there's a hit, we're out. And if there's a no-hitter, we're sticking with it.
I was just eating my sandwich.
What kind of sandwich?
And turkey. A little bit of lettuce, a little bit of tomato, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of turkey.
And what happened?
And I'm just eating it. And I'm just kind of like leaning back. And... For whatever reason, I decided to I was just chewing my sandwich with a little bit more force than I normally do. Just really, really biting down. And I caught the back of my cheek. And oh boy, I bit so hard that I dropped said sandwich and almost fell backwards out of my chair. It might have been the hardest that I have ever bit, like the inside of my mouth before.
Rodon just got a strikeout call on a pitch that was maybe a little bit inside, but there's two outs. I saw somebody tweet about this recently, actually. You never really understand how hard you chew your food until you bite yourself.
So yeah, yeah.
Do you know how I hurt my mouth yesterday?
Yeah.
Burnt it.
Oh, how'd you burn it?
Burnt my lip.
Smoking?
Taking a bite of... a s'mores pop tart. Took a bite of a s'mores pop tart. The interior,
so good. Bleeping good.
The interior was lava hot.
Yeah,
just absolutely lava in the middle.
Chocolate, really burning.
Really toasty boy, and burnt my lip.
So, Rainey.
Rodon's got 1-1 count, two out.
Has tweeted that this is not the worst way to have your perfect game broken up by hit by pitch. In 1908, Hooks Wiltsy lost a
perfect game. That's the most 1908 baseball name ever.
Hook Wiltsy lost a perfect game with two outs and two strikes in the ninth when he hit the batter, who was the opposing pitcher.
Oh.
That's brutal.
All right, one more strike, and this is it for Rodon. Not a perfect game anymore, but a potential no-hitter.
You know what? Be a perfect game in my book.
My
Hall of Fame, always be a
pitch
perfect.
Is high. This Oaks wants to punch him out so bad.
The other
here.
White Sox pitcher. It was
a
White
Sox. White Sox.
Yeah, the referee that the ump that screwed the other White Sox pitcher. Who was that?
I don't remember.
I forget.
I don't remember any of these dudes. 45 seconds. I already forgot the name of that.
White Sox pitcher
no-hitter.
Screwed.
Well,
Joe Musgrove.
Sure.
Armando Galarraga.
Yes.
So the funny thing...
All right, hold on. Here it is. 2-2. pop foul.
Funny thing with Joe Musgrove. So like DraftKings,
you're gonna have to loop this music if it's not.
Has been doing a real
in a minute.
DraftKings has been doing a real thing where like you bet a dollar, you win $100, and they do one. Now you bet a dollar that your team will win. Your team will get a hit, win $100. Somebody absolutely bet on their team to get a hit in that game, and then Joe Musgrove goes and throws a no-hitter, and they're like, bleep me.
Did DraftKings exist however long ago that happened?
No, Joe Musgrove was this year.
Oh, what?
Yeah, the Joe Musgrove. That was the Padres.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The Padres no-hitter. Armando Galarraga was the
was
other
the one
White
that got
Sox.
Screwed.
Yeah.
He's got a full count here. Beards, we can't, legally, we can't end the show if there's a no-hitter that we're watching in real time.
Dump the promos!
We have to buy ourselves some time here, Beards. Just telling you, because I'm not sure this last pitch is going to get off in time. If this is a foul ball, kill a promo. If not, full count, two outs.
Here we go.
Carlos Rodon.
Foul ball.
It's a foul ball. Beards, you're a fascist. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.